huge win for President Trump in the Supreme Court. This was a colossal victory, not just because Trump will remain on the ballot, which is what we expected, but because this was a 9-0 unanimous decision, which, by the way, we predicted it was going to be several weeks ago. And even the radical leftists on the court ruled in favor of Trump, which just exposes how deranged the left has become. This is massive. And even Ketanji Brown Jackson, okay, she doesn't know what a woman is, but she knows that Trump is right. I will give you my full analysis in just a moment. Hunter Biden confirmed that the big guy was, what a shock, his father, Joe Biden. And this is a bombshell, one of many being ignored by the media in the Hunter Biden testimony. But Hunter Biden says, there's nothing wrong, China possibly giving 10% to the big guy. It was 2017, so Joe Biden was no longer vice president at the time, so everything's fine. There's nothing to see here. Hunter also said that the entire investigation is a MAGA conspiracy theory. He literally said this, and he said that he only joined the board of Burisma in order to be able to bring down Vladimir Putin. He says that if he was strategically on the board of an energy company in Ukraine, the largest energy company, that put him in a position to be able to take down Putin. He literally said he cannot make this stuff up. So the full Hunter Biden transcript has been released. There were multiple bombshells. Now, in addition, Hunter Biden, listen, he is one of the slimiest, sleaziest people that I have ever seen. He's a total weasel, but he's shrewd. Okay. He's strategic. Okay. His lawyer gives him good advice, and he knew how to answer, how to flip a lot of the questions back. I went through this virtually the entire transcript. And a lot of it's tedious and technical, but I'll give you the details, the positives and the negatives coming up. President Trump, big week so far. He continues to dominate Joe Biden in the polls. I mean, Trump continues to go up. Biden continues to tank. And a new poll shows that Trump has a significant lead over Biden in the 7 key swing states. This is not just a one-time phenomenon. This has been a continuing trend. Trump's numbers keep going up. Biden keeps plunging. And the media, for a change, the media is being a little bit more honest in its poll numbers and telling us the truth about how badly, how poorly Biden is doing in the polls. But why is that? Because they want to push Biden out. But all those people who said that Trump was not electable, that Trump had no chance of winning, they are starting to regret it right now, because the polls are showing that Trump is very electable, especially if Biden is the nominee, which, again, I'm skeptical. Don't know if that's going to happen. All right. So let's get to the Supreme Court unanimous ruling that Colorado had no right to kick Trump off of the ballot based on insurrection, based on the allegations that he's an insurrectionist. He's never been charged with insurrection. And look, it was a 9-0 ruling. We said at the time, we said that, you know, I thought that this is going to be something which is so clear that it would be a 9-0, and it was, and a unanimous decision. Okay, now, what does this show? It shows you, see, this was a Colorado Supreme Court decision. So what this shows you is that the courts in some of these states, the courts are so hijacked by people on the radical left. They're so deranged. They're so full of Trump derangement syndrome. They're so seething with hatred and disdain for Trump that they're willing to do things that are just totally insane. So even Elena Kagan, even Ketanji Brown Jackson, even Sonia Sotomayor, can you imagine how difficult it must have been for them to rule in favor of Trump? But they are so disgusted with their own people, with people on the left. See, now, so what is the reason officially for the, and somebody asked me, somebody left me a voicemail already about this. What is the, it was an unsigned ruling, which means that, you know, a lot of times when they author a ruling, there'll be like one justice who actually signs their name is the one that authors the ruling, and then there'll be concurrent or consenting opinions from other judges, other justices. Here, it was just an unsigned ruling. So that doesn't really mean much. It was a procedural ruling in the sense that this wasn't like some kind of like long ruling where they're actually judging on. It was more just like procedural where they said the state has no right to do this. So then they kind of chucked it out. It was only a few pages. So that's what that means, that it's unsigned. But they basically said that a state has no right to disqualify a presidential candidate, which is a federal official. He's running for federal office, and that state of Colorado and the court there totally overstepped in its total overreach, because it's a federal election. They said that a state can decide who they want to keep on the state ballot, but not on the federal ballot, because that means the people in Colorado are going to impact the people in New York and California and Florida. Now, the CNN, so that's what this was about. And you're going to say, well, but what about the actual issue itself of being an insurrectionist? In other words, they're saying that Congress has to do this, not the state. That's the essence of the ruling, which then leaves open now Congress. It's never going to happen, but the Democrats in Congress want to actually pass a law that bans Trump from the ballot, which shows you how deranged the Democrats in Congress are. But that was the overall nuts and bolts of the ruling. Was a pretty simplistic ruling. Listen, state can't do this. This has to be done at a federal level. The CNN spin was they actually looked at this as a little bit of a win for the left, which is just insane. They said that Trump, you know, they didn't discuss the court. The Supreme Court never got into, well, did Trump commit insurrection or not? So the justices never actually came out and said that Trump did not carry out an insurrection. I mean, give me a break. So Trump, this is a huge blow. See, here's the problem. The reason that this is such a big blow to the Democrats and such a big win, see, if Trump had won 5-4 or 6-3, that would be a win. But what happened here is the liberal justices siding with Trump, right? And yet CNN is still somehow trying to twist this around that somehow it hurts Trump. It cannot overstate how big a win this is. It's a death blow. This is a death blow to the Democrats because it exposes everything that's going on right now. All the indictments that are going on, all the charges against Trump, all the insanity, right? This shows you if Ketanji Brown Jackson, if the liberals on the Supreme Court, and it must have destroyed them to have to actually rule in favor of Trump. But what they are seeing is they're seeing that justice right now is being so hijacked and mutilated because of all these nut jobs on the left who hate Trump that they had no choice, but they had to rule unanimously. And by the way, you know, they arrange it. They know each justice is, they actually arrange how the vote's going to go. They talk about this stuff with each other. So they could have made it 8-1. If there was one holdout, if there was one who said, you know what, I don't think that this thing is so insane. I want to rule, we'll make it 8-1, and it'll still go in favor of the way we want it to go. They were sending a message. The message they're sending is that even the most woke, radical, leftist judge, justice, who doesn't know what a woman is, because she's not a biologist, they are sickened over the abuse of the justice system. So there are two points to this. Number one, the statement is, and we got a lot of other stuff to get to today, but the left's persecution of Trump, right? They have hijacked the justice system. It confirms everything we said. Judges in America right now, and not just judges, Democrats and DAs who are indicting Trump and special counsels, they are no different than Vladimir Putin. They are no different than KGB tactics. And this proves it, okay? Because what they keep saying is, oh, that's the MAGA supporters. Yeah, the Republicans are going to go and say that the justice system is being hijacked, but Democrats know better. That's what they keep saying, is they keep saying this is not a bipartisan issue. This is something that Republicans and MAGA supporters are claiming, but it's not real. Once you have now leftists, radical leftists, okay, these people, the Supreme Court justices on the left, they literally murder babies in their ninth month, and yet they are saying, oh, this went too far. How can you disqualify Trump from the ballot? And it's amazing because you talk about a threat to democracy. Trump's not a threat to democracy. January 6th, see, Trump, everyone says that, look what would have happened. He would have hijacked the presidency. He did not hijack. He took it to the, what did Trump do? He took it to the courts. He felt that the election was rigged. It was rigged. So what did Trump do? He brought it to the courts. He went through the process. He was struck down. He got out. He walked out of the White House. They didn't have to drag him kicking and screaming. He said Mike Pence should not certify the election. Pence certified the election. If Pence had not certified the election, it would have gone to the courts and Trump would have fought. And if he loses, he loses. So that's number one. Number two, what this shows is that, you know, every time Trump wins in the Supreme Court, what do they say? They say, oh, he won 6-3, 5-4. It was the conservative justices. You know, they're in the tank for Trump. This shows you the Supreme Court rulings are legit, okay? When the court rules in favor of Trump, they're not in the tank of Trump. Definitely these three liberals. CNN said, here's what they say. They're making it like, oh, this is a technicality. CNN is acting now. I heard CNN today after this, right when this ruling came in, and they're like, well, we expected this to happen. We knew this was probably going to happen. I mean, how many times did we hear that Trump could possibly potentially be disqualified, and they had a right to disqualify Trump from the ballot in Colorado, and then they did Illinois, Massachusetts, other places. Oh, well, it's just a technicality. The Supreme Court, of course they were going to rule this way, but that doesn't mean that Trump's not an insurrectionist. So, again, very, very big win for Trump, because this shows you that even the people on the radical left are so disgusted by everything that's happening to Trump that they had no choice but to admit this is bogus and disqualifying Trump from the, and it's not just this, all these dirty, vicious tactics, and they're the threat to democracy. We're not trying to disqualify their candidates from the ballot. I would love to disqualify Michelle Obama from the ballot, because I'm still concerned that she actually may run. So, but they're the ones in the name of democracy who are thwarting and suppressing and a huge threat threat to democracy. All right, Governor Hochul has released a plan that will ensure that New York State hires illegals, gives top priority to illegals for state jobs before hiring legal U.S. citizens. It's unbelievable. New York State, thanks to Governor Hochul, is going to hire illegals and give them priority when hiring for state jobs. We'll get to that coming up. This week, of course, is Super Tuesday. By the way, congratulations to Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley actually won her first primary. And where is that primary? That was Washington, D.C. And that just shows you Washington, D.C., we know, is just full of Democrats. I mean, the whole place, you know, it's full of Democrats and members of the swamp. Who else lives in Washington, D.C.? So Nikki Haley finally has a place where, you know, she fits in and can actually win something. And a lot of people are saying, let me just say this about Nikki Haley. All the votes that she has won, all the delegates that she has won, for the most part in other states, you know, 40% in South Carolina and these other states, most of those are Democrats and independents that crossed over. All this shit. Nikki Haley, her best turnouts have been in the open primaries where Democrats are able to cross and vote for Republicans, vote on the Republican side of the primary. And what's happening, there is no primary really on the Democrat side. It's not like there's any contest there. Everybody knows that Biden's the winner. Not that that means he's going to run, but everyone knows he's the winner of any of these primaries and by a landslide. So a lot of Democrat voters have no problem crossing over because it's not like their vote means anything on the Democrat side. So even Nikki Haley, you know, she claimed, well, I got 40% of South Carolina, which is a blowout landslide, 60 to 40 in her home state. It's an embarrassment. But you got to realize that the vote she's getting for the most part are Democrats and our independents. This week is Super Tuesday. And the question is, will Nikki Haley, I'm recording this, it's Monday evening. It does not look like Nikki Haley is going to be pulling out of the race before Super Tuesday. I'm guessing it's going to be within a couple of days, if not Tuesday night, right after the results are announced. You got 15 states voting. And is Nikki Haley going to win a single race on Super Tuesday? No, it's highly unlikely. Again, unless there's like more Democrat voters participating than Republicans, it's not going to happen. And it does seem like she stopped running ads in a lot of places. So handwriting's on the wall here. Nikki Haley is getting ready, it looks like, to withdraw. She said on Sunday that she does not feel obligated to support President Trump if and when he's the nominee, even though she pledged to support him, of course, in order to participate in the RNC debates, in the Republican committee debates, she had to pledge to support the eventual nominee. They all had to, and Nikki Haley did so. And now she actually said on Sunday in an interview, well, no, I don't know if I'm going to support him. I have to think about it. But what do you mean? But what about your pledge? She says, well, the RNC now has a new leadership, so that nullifies her pledge. Because, of course, Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, is going to be taking over the leadership of the RNC. And it's unbelievable how these politicians are all the same. Oh, the pledge. Well, I made the pledge on a Tuesday, but I don't need to keep pledges that I make on a Tuesday. You know, I said the nominee, but I didn't mean a nominee whose name rhymes with pump and starts with a T. I mean, they come up with silly reasons. I mean, what you say, did you say that I'm only going to keep my pledge if the Republican committee, she knows that people can step down. She knew Ron McDaniel could step down. That's a possibility. It's still the same Republican National Committee. Okay, maybe she's not happy that it's being taken over by Trump, and we can debate that, you know, does Trump have too much power? You know, I think it actually makes a lot of sense since he's clearly the leader of the party that there should be people in place. But I understand that some people are not happy about that, but that doesn't change the fact that you made a pledge and you've got to keep the pledge. But of course, like most politicians, a pledge is just something that happened last year. It's nothing that concerns her right now or something she feels that the need to abide by. So pretty amazing. All right, so let's get to this poll. A new poll shows that President Trump is beating President Biden in 7 key swing states, and this is he has significant leads. Okay, and this is what we told you all along. Those people who said, and you say, oh, but Nikki Haley would be beating him by an even bigger margin. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It's irrelevant, because what I kept hearing from people is Trump cannot win. He's unelectable. People are too upset about him. They think he's a racist. They're upset about January 6th and all of that. And what did I keep saying? I never said, you know what? I guarantee you Trump is going to win. I guaranteed that Trump would win the nomination because that was a no-brainer. I never said he will win. I still don't know if he's going to win in November or not. What I kept saying is things change so dramatically. And I've seen times when literally from month to month, somebody who was a total underdog suddenly became a huge favorite. And the polls change and the polls are not reliable anyway. So that's all I kept saying. And still, I'm not saying, oh, Trump's a shoo-in to win if he runs against Biden. Biden is the weakest candidate that anybody could ever imagine. He's a total disaster. I love it. I'm listening to some of these leftist shows, CNN, MSNBC, these leftist cable networks, and they're like, look at the economy. Literally, these are their words. The economy is roaring. The economy is roaring because they're measuring GDP and they're measuring unemployment. Unemployment's a bogus statistic because they're hiring all these illegals, and that's included in job growth and job creation. And a lot of people have left the job market, and a lot of other technical reasons why unemployment doesn't matter. But they're looking at the stock market, which doesn't affect most people's day-to-day lives. It's nice to have it rising, but still. And, they're looking at inflation. And inflation is still high, but inflation is lower than it was. So these people are totally they're in another alternate universe saying inflation is down. Why are people so upset? And then somebody will pipe in, well, because prices are three times as high as they used to be, because the price of eggs and gas and bread and cars and car insurance are through the roof, and people don't care about the fact that you measured and inflation is now only 3% and it used to be 8%. And they care about the fact that prices are literally like way, way up compared to when Trump was president. Anyway, so people are really upset at Biden, including independents. So let me go through state by state over here. In Arizona, Trump's beating Biden 49-43, Georgia 49-43, Michigan 49-44, Nevada 48-42. By the way, this is a Morning Consult Bloomberg poll. This is a legit poll. I don't believe in any polls, but as legit as any. North Carolina 50-41, big lead. Pennsylvania 49-43. Wisconsin 46-42, and data shows that 8 out of 10 voters in swing states are concerned about Biden's age and believe that he is too old to lead the country. All right, so Super Tuesday, like I said, we got 15 states: Alabama, Arkansas, California, Colorado. Let me see any other interesting ones here: Utah, Vermont, Virginia, Oklahoma, Tennessee, American Samoa, which is a U.S. territory. That they also have a primary on Super Tuesday, so I imagine this will be the end of Nikki Haley's campaign. All these people who keep talking about that, it's unbelievable. They keep blaming the Republicans. They're blaming Trump. I literally hear them on CNN blaming Trump for the border mess and blaming the Republicans. They're saying, well, it's Trump's fault. How could it possibly be Trump's fault? How could it possibly be? Because Trump told the Republicans not to vote for that bogus immigration bill, which was going to allow 5,000 illegals to cross the border every single day. 5,000 was going to codify it into law and all sorts of other terrible things in that bill. And that makes Trump, here you have Biden, who opened up the borders and opened the floodgates. Millions and millions of illegals have poured through. Horrible things going on. These illegals are doing terrible, terrible things in this country. And everybody hates it. Not to mention, even just all the billions of dollars that it costs to support them, because they are leeches. Okay, they don't work and contribute. They're living off of our tax dollars, and Eric Adams is giving them credit cards. Literally, he's giving them prepaid Visa cards, and he's giving them these luxury hotel rooms, and it's just insane. And people are furious, and they're blaming Trump. Well, and then they go and say, well, Biden needs legislation. He does not. Okay, Biden issued, and the proof is because Trump shut down the border, and he had no legislation. But that Biden issued 94 executive orders in the first 100 days in office on immigration. Biden issued, most of them were reversing Trump policies, but he issued 94 executive orders in his first 100 days, all on immigration, and 300 in his first year. So all he needs to do is reverse the reversals and reverse those 300 executive orders on immigration. It is all 100% in the hands of the executive branch, in the hands of the president, and they know it. And it's obvious because there hasn't been border legislation in decades, and Trump completely shut down and secured the border. And a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there who watch CNN, who read the New York Times, who say, oh, wow, how could Trump have done this? Trump actually shut down border legislation. That would have solved, and it wouldn't have solved the problem, because there'd be no way to enforce it. It's ridiculous, because 5,000 a day is an insane amount when you do the math every month to month and throughout the year. I want to tell you about an exchange, and it's really, really, it shows you how disgraceful the mainstream media is, as though we need more proof. CNN's Dana Bash, okay, she interviewed on Sunday a Republican senator. His name is Mark Wayne Mullen. He's a senator from Oklahoma, and he's very knowledgeable. He's going through a lot of the legislative things, and he's going back and forth with her. He was very, very courteous and respectful. And, she's grilling him, asking him different questions about the border and about, Mitch McConnell stepping down and all of that. We have to get into the McConnell stuff a little bit more at some point. But here's what she said. She's talking to him about Ukraine funding because that's their favorite topic at CNN. And she says, and I guess he supports Ukraine funding. And of course, the Senate passed a bill. But, you know, he supports it, this Senator Mullen, but he also says we got to fix the border first. He says we're not going to go and send billions to Ukraine, and we haven't even addressed our border. So, you know, he's against the bill that only provides funding for Ukraine and Israel but doesn't fix the U.S. southern border, which I think he's 100% spot on about. And you'll say, well, don't we need to send the money to Israel? Yeah, look, we do. But if you're an American, speaking from an American perspective, you know, and the border is such a nightmare, such a catastrophic crisis— And it's like how you justify sending money to a foreign country. I totally, you know, get that from an American perspective. But either way, that's not the point. The point is that she says, why can't Mike Johnson, if Mike Johnson takes that to a floor vote in the House, the bill that already passed the Senate where they fund Ukraine and Israel without fixing the border, he would get the votes combined Republicans and Democrats. He would get enough votes for it to pass because there are some moderate Republicans who vote in favor of that bill. And Mark Wayne Mullen says back, he says, no, Mike Johnson can't do that because he requires a majority of the majority in order to bring a floor, bring it up for that legislation, that bill up to the House floor for a vote on the floor of the House. He needs to have a majority of the majority party. So she says back, and she looks, she's all condescending, and she, you know, she's all arrogant, and she says, well, he doesn't need to have a majority of the majority. He wants to have a majority of the majority. And Mark Wayne Mullen responded in a very, very courteous way. Like, he should have called her out a little bit more, but he was very nice and respectful, and he's like, no, he needs it. He says the House conference rules are that he needs it. The House has conference rules, okay? So there are rules. In other words, the Republican conference, not the House per se, not the congressional rules, but the Republican conference, the rules state that the Speaker can only bring it to a vote if he canvasses and has the majority of the majority party of his own party. So it is his rule. It is something that he has to abide by. It's not just something he wants to do. It's something she looks, you know, she's all arrogant and says, well, he doesn't have to have that. He just wants to have that. He says, no, he has to have that because the House conference rules. And she's a deer in the headlights. I mean, he totally shut her down. You know, she, I think, felt so foolish. And she says, understood. And, you know, and then she says, fair point. And, you know, fair point for a CNN anchor who just got completely humiliated, you know, by somebody who knew the rules better than her. And she had no idea. And she just, like, you know, nonchalantly, oh, well, he doesn't have to, just wants to. No, well, no, actually, he has to. Oh, understood. Fair point. That's like her saying, whoops, I messed up big time. I feel so dumb. And that's what's going on. But I said to myself, they do this all the time. They, you know, she, number one, she has no idea. She's clueless. But number two, it's not just clueless. It's cluelessness where she doesn't care. She could go and research it, but she doesn't care enough to, because as long, any chance she has to bash the Republicans, she bashes the Republicans. And they do this all day long, but there's nobody there to correct them. And they just report it, and it's fake news. And whether it's laziness, it's not laziness. It's not like, because they don't make those mistakes on the Democrat side. It's they want to report something negative about the other side, about the Republicans who they can't stand. And, you know, but maybe if they had researched it, I'm not saying they would outright lie, but, you know, they just ignore details like this all day long because of their vicious bias. But the point is, how often does she have a chance to get away with it when she's not actually interviewing a Republican? This one time, he happened to be able to be there to contradict her. It's pretty frustrating. And it's just so outrageous, unconscionable, that the media, they just get away. They tell these lies. They make it like Trump is responsible for the border, and they tell all these lies about, you know, Trump with the indictments, and just over and over again, one thing after the next, they tell lies about Biden and the economy. And I mean, they just, they're so vicious, and they're so full of, they're such frauds, and they're so fake. And you think to yourself, but who could possibly believe it? Who could possibly? And yes, millions of Americans, this is their news source, and they do believe it. It sounds shocking, but it's actually true. All right, so I interviewed Binyamin Rose of Mishpacha magazine. We really dove into a lot of the interesting issues about Israel and the war in Gaza. And, you know, he made several interesting points that I just wanted to bring up here quickly. You know, number one, I asked him about President Biden. You might have heard this interview, but either way, I asked him about President Biden. And, you know, he's not happy. Of course, I went through the list of things that Biden has done, just disgraceful things, and how he's treated Israel. And by the way, they're pressuring now for a 6-week ceasefire. They're pressuring for a ceasefire pre-Ramadan. Ramadan has become, and it's totally arbitrary. They don't care about Ramadan, but you know, they use it just as a bogus negotiating chip because it makes Israel look bad if they keep the war going during Ramadan. It's just optics. And the Muslims, the Arabs, the Palestinians, they don't care about Ramadan. Biden certainly doesn't care about Ramadan. But either way, So Biden, when he first came to visit Israel, and remember, everybody was so grateful, and he's such a close friend of Israel. And we told you at the time that, I didn't believe it for a second. So Benjamin Rose said, he said the same thing, that when Biden first visited, he said, oh, he's coming here for one reason. He's coming here to control the war. Macron visited. They're coming to control the war. So it's actually the opposite of being a close friend of Israel. They were literally coming so that they could have as much influence and as much leverage as possible. And, he pointed out that Biden, he's not allowing Israel to carry out airstrikes. He's not allowing Israel to carry out the, to use the Moab bomb, the mother of all bombs, the bunker busters, which really, really puts Israel in a very, very precarious position because of all the booby-trapped buildings and everything. Israel right now, the ground fighting, because they go in and they haven't been able to carry out airstrikes or bunker buster bombs, that actually causes a lot of IDF soldiers, a lot of Israeli soldiers to be in grave danger. And he definitely implied, insinuated what we've suspected for a long time, that, a lot of IDF soldiers' lives, they've been wounded or even killed, Rahman al-Islam, because of Biden, literally because Biden won't allow them to clear the area out with airstrikes and bunker busters. And he pointed out that Israel has made multiple concessions to Biden. They have not carried out a war. Hezbollah right now is launching rocket attack after rocket attack and these anti-tank missiles. Hezbollah has been doing a ton of damage. Hezbollah has been murdering Israelis at the northern border. And only because of Biden has Israel not responded, retaliated, not attacked Hezbollah in the north. And just other there have been many other concessions to Joe Biden as well that again puts Israel in a dangerous position. And he pointed out, and this is a great point because I tell you how often I hear Israel getting blamed for the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. It makes no sense. Of course we know it's absurd because if Hamas would lay down their arms, if Hamas would surrender, and Hamas would release the hostages, Israel could go into Gaza. There'd be no more humanitarian crisis. The Palestinians in Gaza, the civilians, the so-called innocent civilians would be safe. Okay. All Hamas has to do is just give up. Hamas is the reason. But putting that aside for a moment, Israel didn't want this, but that's not even the point. Benjamin Rose said, what do you think that this humanitarian crisis, as they call it, you think it like started a week ago? You think it started in October? He said, there's been a humanitarian crisis in Gaza for nearly 17 years. Hamas controls Gaza. They hoard all the money. The Palestinian civilians have been living in a wasteland, literally have been living in a cesspool for 15, 16, 17 years, and it's not any worse. It's not like Israel made the situation. Yeah, they made it a little worse, obviously, with the bombing. But the vast majority of what they call the humanitarian crisis, all that Israel did is they went in there and are taking control and are bombing Hamas and are bombing all these targets. But it's not like Israel made a humanitarian crisis. The Gazans have been hungry, have been going around starving for years. They don't have enough supplies. They don't have any money. They don't have any, they don't have any jobs. So all Israel did is now, like, Israel takes ownership over it. Why? Because they happen to be in there and they're a presence and they're dismantling Hamas. So it's like insane that Israel gets accused of creating a humanitarian crisis when all they did, it's already in existence. And it was a full-fledged humanitarian crisis before. And so, it's like as though, and by the way, America and the humanitarian crisis that they had on their hands in Afghanistan and in Iraq, but putting all that aside, but it's like Israel goes in somewhere. It's like if America would get attacked by a country where everybody's starving, and then America goes in and retaliates and sends troops in, and then it's like, oh, well, now it's America's fault because everybody's starving. Well, they were starving before America went in. America didn't make them be starving anymore. That's really the situation. All right, what else is going on? We told you about Governor Kathy Hochul. She's implemented a plan to give illegals priority for jobs over U.S. citizens. It's a new rule she imposed, which is fast-tracking illegals into state jobs by eliminating requirements such as taking the civil service exam and having a high school diploma. So basically, the only requirement to get a state job in New York State is going to be being in the country illegally. And you can't make this stuff up. And this is redistribution of wealth. That's what this is they want state tax dollars to go to fund illegals. Literally, eliminating having a high school diploma and taking the civil service exam. So they're eliminating any kind of requirements. Well, I mean, it's one thing if you want to let illegals do it without having work papers, but force them to get a GED. In California, they're also redistributing. California has approved a $20 minimum wage. $20. And what do you think's going on there? It's total redistribution of wealth, right? Because what's Starbucks? Starbucks, 7-Eleven, CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, what are they going to do in California, right? $20 an hour to pay their employees. You think they're going to lose money? They're not going to lose money. So what are they going to do? They're going to turn it over to the consumer, to the middle class who's struggling, who's going to have to pay extra when they buy basic staples, right? Basic groceries and products, et cetera. So what is that? That's textbook redistribution of wealth. And the illegals are the ones who benefit most, but also the low income, the minorities, because that's what happens is it's turned over to the middle class. The middle class then is going to pay because these companies are not the ones who are going to, you know, it's not going to come out of their pockets. They're going to turn it over to us. And that is redistribution of wealth, because that way these low-level workers who, you know, have no degree and are the lowest of the low are earning $20 an hour that they do not deserve. And who's it coming from? It's coming from the middle class who are struggling mightily as it is. All right, Governor Ron DeSantis abolished the DEI department at the University of Florida. 28 people were fired, so he's really cleaning house there. It's unbelievable how 28 people were involved in the DEI program, making a lot of money, the University of Florida. And Ron DeSantis, he eliminated all positions focused on DEI in the University of Florida. So good for him. Very, you know, very, very exciting news there. Ron DeSantis continues to wage war on the woke left. All right, so you know, how much? The question is how much to get into here with the Hunter Biden testimony. I got a lot, but all right, you know what? We're going to dive in a little bit. Hopefully you're interested. I think it's very important for us to recognize everything going on with Hunter Biden. And let me just begin like this, okay? The Hunter Biden is sleazy, slimy weasel. Hunter Biden, we know the game that he played, the influence peddling, using the Biden name, using his father, okay? This is an open secret. This is not something – there's nobody who – denies or pretends to not understand the game that was happening here. Everybody knows, okay? The right, the left, I don't care who you are. Everybody knows Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma. It's not because of his brilliant, you know, energy, knowledge, and strategy, okay? He's getting tens of millions of dollars from CEFC, the Chinese Communist government energy company. Okay, this is not because of his vast knowledge and his skills and because he was giving them such great business advice. Everybody knows, okay, the same way Hunter Biden's artistry, okay, he's not Picasso and people are paying $500,000 and then mysteriously, coincidentally getting put on some kind of esteemed, you know, prestigious board that's overseen by the White House, some, you know, the Foreign Antiquities Board or whatever it is. Okay, coincidentally, the same people who are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for Hunter Biden artwork. So everybody understands the game that Hunter Biden is playing, and it's illegal and it's corrupt. And he's literally using his father as VP and now as president to be able to make millions of dollars. And then his father, in turn, is doing favors and giving benefits to these foreign entities working for our enemies, for China and Ukraine. Ukraine's not an enemy, but they're not exactly a close friend either. And that's the game. And everybody knows it. And yet he's not going to ever be indicted for it. Biden, President Joe Biden, not going to be impeached. Everybody knows who the big guy is. And now it's confirmed. So that's what's so frustrating is that, you know, they cover their tracks well. These are not stupid people. So they knew, you know, they had the 20 shell companies. So the money's going from one bank account to another bank account. Eventually, it somehow, you know, finds its way into Joe Biden's account. And they say, oh, no, that was just a loan repayment. And they have all these ways to cover it up. And they were very, very clever and strategic the way they covered it up. So he's never Hunter Biden. They've got other indictments. They got the tax fraud and the gun, the lying on the gun application and that. But he's never ever going to suffer any consequences. And neither is Joe Biden over all the corruption and it's Uncle James. It's Joe Biden's brother. And, you know, and all these people, they're all profiting off of the Biden name, making millions and millions of dollars from foreign enemies. And nobody's ever going to pay for it. And you have to just kind of accept that. You have to swallow that because that's just the reality. And the problem is it's much harder. You know, if you have a crime, you know, there was no smoking gun in this testimony. There are a lot of bizarre things and bombshells I'm going to explain. But none of it is going to amount to any kind of indictment or any kind of impeachment or any of that. So you have to realize that going in is that it's really hard to prove a crime. It's like amazing because Trump-Russia collusion. The media spent 2 years telling us how Trump is this Russian spy, and that was literally made up and literally fabricated. And here you have so much basis, you know, to so much evidence, and it's so clear, even without that informant, you know, even if you discount that informant who's been indicted, it's so clear the level of corruption and influence peddling and the Biden mafia crime family. And yet it's very hard to even prove a crime. And this testimony, you know, really, and I think the Republicans could have done a much better job of asking him questions. And who knows, maybe they're setting him up. They want him to say a lot of things so that when they do a public hearing, you know, they can catch him in some sort of perjury trap or something. I don't know, but I'm disappointed. But either way, all right, let's get through, you know, with that introduction, with that preface. Here are the most stunning and bizarre claims by Hunter Biden. Number one, he said it's all a MAGA orchestrated conspiracy theory to try to bring him down, this whole investigation. He said, quote, you do not have evidence to support the baseless and MAGA motivated conspiracies, and said the only basis for the claims of Biden family corruption have come from criminals, fugitives, or other liars. Really? And emails that came off of his laptop. Number two, he said, you know, he tried to give an explanation without getting too much into the weeds here for a text message that he sent to a man named Raymond Zhao. Raymond Zhao was working for CEFC, the Chinese communist government run energy company. OK, and Hunter Biden's trying to shake him down for like millions of dollars. So here's the text message, quote, I'm sitting here with my father and we would like to understand why the commitment has not been fulfilled. I'm very concerned that the chairman has either changed his mind or broken our deal without telling me. And tell the director I'd like to resolve this now before it gets out of hand. And that means tonight. This is Hunter Biden's text message to this man named Zhao, who's Raymond Zhao, working for CEFC. He said, if I get a call or text from anyone involved in this other than you, Zhang, or the chairman, I'll make certain the man sitting next to me and every person he knows my ability to forever hold a grudge, that you will regret not following direction. All too often people mistake kindness for weakness. And all too often I'm standing over the top of them saying, I warned you. And then Zhao replied right away, I'll call you on WhatsApp. So this is very, very damaging because he's sitting next to Joe Biden, or at least he claims he's sitting next to Joe Biden, and threatening, and he wants his millions of dollars from China, from the Chinese communists. Pretty damaging evidence, right? And by the way, CEFC, that company, just a few days after that text message, they transferred $5 million to a company that Hunter Biden created. But Hunter Biden said, no, I sent my text to the wrong person. He says, because he was addicted. By the way, he claimed that he was so drunk and so addicted at that time under the influence that he didn't even know what he was doing. At the same time, they said, well, were you with your father? Because you wrote you sitting next to your father. No, I wasn't. So which one is it? I mean, either you're clear-headed enough to know you weren't with your father, or you're so drunk that you're sending a text message to the wrong guy. Somehow he's managing to say both. Okay, so here's what here's what he said in his testimony, quote, I, like an idiot, directed it towards Henry Zhao, who had no involvement and no understanding or even remotely knew what I was talking about. So, I was reading whatever outlet I was reading said back, first, given the quick response to Hunter's text from CEFC, it's unbelievable that the text did not go to the Zhao who's connected to CEFC. He's basically claiming it was a different Zhao and it's just a coincidence. Because otherwise the CEFC, Hunter Biden's in big trouble. Second, but he's not going to get indicted. I just don't believe it. Second, even if Hunter basically drunk dialed the wrong person, that does not exonerate him or his father, because the evidence establishes that his father helped Hunter, showcasing his accessibility to his son's business partners. And as I said, the $5 million came just a few days later. So, I mean, again, smoking gun to you and me, yes, but I don't think it's enough personally, but it is beyond any comprehension that he could claim this and get away with it. He also claimed that Burisma, get this, he claimed that Burisma wanted help. Hunter Biden claimed Burisma wanted help from his teenage daughters to solve their legal issues. Devin Archer, who of course, is a former business partner of Hunter Biden. He testified that in early December 2015, after a Burisma board meeting, the founder of Burisma asked Hunter Biden to call D.C. because they had a lot of pressure being placed on the company. Remember, 2015, Joe Biden's VP. In a follow-up question, Devin Archer confirmed that Burisma wanted help from the United States government to deal with the pressure they were under from their prosecutor, and that entails freezing of assets at the London Bank, other things that were going on in Ukraine. So according to Devin Archer, Hunter stepped away and he made the call to Washington, D.C. So Hunter was asked by the Republicans, this was a good question, they said, who are you calling? And he says, I never would have called and I never did call my father on behalf of Burisma. So who did you call? Hunter said, I don't remember, but it was either my wife or my high school aged daughters. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. So Burisma wanted him to call his wife or his daughters who were teenagers to try to help them with all the pressure they were under. And Hunter basically is still trying to claim that his laptop, the laptop which was discovered, which has been proven to be genuine time and again, he's still trying to claim it's a fake. He was asked about his laptop if he remembers dropping it off at a repair store. And he said, here's what he said. He said, I would never have dropped. He doesn't remember, of course, because his addiction is very convenient. But he says, I never would have dropped it off in a repair shop in Delaware. So it's absurd. He's saying that he's not saying I did not drop it off, right? He's saying I would not have dropped it off, because if he says I did not drop it off, that's perjury. So this is what he's doing. This is the game he's playing. He says, I don't remember dropping it off. He said, but if I was going to, I would have gone to the Apple store 7 minutes from my parents' home. I wouldn't have gone to that other laptop repair shop in Delaware. So in other words, according to the outlet over here, Hunter is claiming he would not have dropped his laptop off at Mac Isaac store. That's the store where it was eventually discovered, in order to suggest that he did not, but he's not actually saying he did not. And the reason is he's trying to push this conspiracy theory that the laptop abandoned at the Delaware repair shop was a plant, which, again, we've heard this again and again, and it's been authenticated a million times over, including by the FBI. And he said many different things on the laptop were either fabricated, hacked, stolen, or manipulated. And then they asked him, well, which things were stolen or hacked or fabricated or manipulated? He said, well, I can't go through them all right now. And then they asked him, well, what value did you offer? What was your brand? What value did you offer to Burisma and all these companies? And he said, well, I provided the best advice that I could give. You know, he said that they needed help with legal problems, and which he knew nothing about. And he said that, he said that he didn't even know that Burisma was under investigation in the UK for money laundering, and had $23 million of assets frozen until it became public. And yet, supposedly, they were asking him for advice on how to deal with these things, which he was not even aware of. You would think that a board member with the impressive resume of Hunter Biden, because he's claiming that he had this great resume and these great skill sets, you would think that he would know. He's in charge of corporate governance at Burisma. You'd think he'd know that there's an investigation of frozen assets before it became public, but he did not. He confirmed that the big guy was actually referring to President Joe Biden. There was a message in 2017 about a 10% stake in a deal with CEFC of China, the energy company, held by H, which is Hunter, for the big guy. Okay, that was a message from business associate James Gillier. So Hunter confirmed that that's referring to Joe Biden, which we've long suspected. But he said that, no, my father wasn't involved, and my father didn't get any money. And he said that, you know, I don't even know what he's talking about, because my father wasn't involved in the business. He said that over and over again, insisted his father's not involved in the business, but he confirmed that his father was the big guy who was getting a 10% stake. But he says, oh, my father never got this 10% stake. And then he said, but it's fine anyway, because remember, Joe Biden, for the first time in 48 years, this 2017, is not an elected official, not seeking office. So James is probably thinking, oh, wow, let's get the former vice president involved in our business. But it's all clean. It's all squeaky clean. And by the way, it's been confirmed by James Biden, Joe's brother. Last week, he testified that $40,000 in laundered money from the same Chinese company, CEFC, made its way into Joe Biden's bank account. James said he confirmed this, that $40,000 came to Joe Biden originated from CEFC. And by the way, according to the timeline, the money transfers began just days after Hunter reported, days after Hunter invoked his father in that WhatsApp message. And by the way, Hunter claims, we told you that he wasn't with his father when he sent that WhatsApp message, even though he said he was, but he was lying, he claims. Well, guess what? There's evidence, including photos, that show that he was at his father's house the day those messages were sent, which we've reported on in the past. It's unbelievable. By the way, Hunter Biden contradicted. You know, James Biden says the $40,000, which he claims was a loan repayment, actually originated in CEFC. So that's a real smoking gun. And Hunter contradicted his own uncle. And he said, no, the money did not actually come from CEFC. Now, the things that Hunter Biden could not recall, he could not recall sending that text message, even though he recalls that his father wasn't sitting next to him. He could not recall sending a message to Tony Bobulinski, where he said, my chairman gave an emphatic no. Now, but Hunter does recall the chairman was not Joe Biden, because the question was, when he said my chairman, who's my chairman? And some of his business associates said that his chairman was referring to Joe Biden. But he said, no, Joe Biden wasn't involved in my business. So he contradicts their testimony as well. A lot more going on, but we'll leave it at that with Hunter Biden. Pretty, pretty stunning testimony. Is it going to lead anywhere? No. I wanted to mention this AP headline. This is egregious. You know, we told you about this Lakin Riley. Lakin Riley was a 22-year-old college student who was murdered by an illegal. And that illegal was known to authorities and had committed other crimes but was released and allowed to stay in the country. Lakin Riley was murdered. An AP headline said, quote, Lakin Riley murder shows the dangers faced by female runners. That's the AP headline's takeaway. What a disgrace. Lakin Riley murder shows the dangers faced by female runners, not by all the millions of illegals that Joe Biden has allowed in. A caller made the point, you know, we were talking about the risks, new studies that show all the risks of the COVID vaccine. Amazes me. I still see young people, 20-year-old, 25-year-old, totally healthy, no risk factors whatsoever. They're still getting COVID boosters. They're still doing it. The doctors, to me, should be lose their license and should be put in jail if they would give a young person, teenager, 20-year-old, who's totally healthy, the COVID vaccine. It's just insane to me. But a caller said, listen, you know, how can I bash the vaccine? Trump's been promoting the vaccine, and Trump's very proud of the vaccine, Operation Warp Speed. So 2 points. Number one, listen, I don't have to agree with Trump about everything. Yeah, Trump is very, you know, he's in favor of the COVID vaccine. It's his baby. I mean, and he, you know, he got it developed way quicker, Warp Speed, way quicker than any other politician. Joe Biden, we'd still be waiting for the vaccine. Maybe that would be a good thing, again, you know, because of all the dangers of the vaccine. But I don't have to agree with Trump just because I'm a big supporter of Trump, and I am. And he's had some big wins recently, but doesn't mean that, you know, I agree with everything that he says. But, you know, I do think you could make the case that the vaccine did help elderly people, very high-risk people who are 70 or 80. Maybe the benefit outweighed the risk. I don't know. But you're right. Trump goes much further than I'm willing to go on that. That's the furthest I'm willing to go. But we just don't have the data. They never released the data. A listener asked me, if Trump loses this year in the general, will I still support him in 2028 if he decides to run again? I don't think he would run again in 2028, but the answer is no. I would not support him. You know, again, I'm not delusional. I do think that Trump, it doesn't matter what I say, because he's winning the nomination this time. So, like, it wouldn't have really mattered what I said, but I do think he's, you know, a much better candidate than most of the others, certainly more than Nikki Haley. And, I would not support him in 2028, because if he loses this time around, then, you know, you got to move on. You got to find somebody who's more electable. But, you know, let's wait and see. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. And finally, a caller said, you know, I've said positive things about Nikki Haley, and I meant it. You know, Nikki Haley, she's run a very strong candidacy. Her strategy, you tell me, well, she's been banking on the Democrats to vote for her and support her. Okay. That's a strategy, right? I mean, you know, you may not like that strategy, but, you know, it was successful. You got to give her campaign credit. Either way, the caller said she sold her soul to the devil. You know, she totally sold out. She's a total sellout. She's a total phony. She exposed herself because she chose winning over her core values. Okay, she was always a strong conservative, and suddenly she decided to take this sharp turn to the left when she realized, well, that was her only shot to win, was to be an alternative to MAGA, an alternative to Trump, and basically become a Democrat leftist. And people view her as a better alternative to Biden. The Biden voters, the disgruntled Biden voters, vote for Nikki Haley, not Republicans. And I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I never meant to say that I'm proud or have admiration for what Nikki Haley did. And I don't think Trump would do it. I don't think DeSantis would do it. Okay. I don't think, you know, even though politicians love to win, I think a lot of these politicians, they would not basically become Democrats, moderate Democrats, if that's what it takes to win. So I'll totally agree that Nikki Haley sold her soul and exposed herself as a phony, and she's no conservative. Certainly not. She's an establishment politician who will do whatever it takes to win and completely sell out. And that's not good. But I still, you know, give her credit for having a winning strategy. I think that both things can be true. Okay, you can despise what she did, but still recognize that she was successful. And it was a very, very clever strategy. That's going to do it for, and it may make her the front runner, buckle up here, for the Republican nomination in 2028. And she suddenly might remember that she's a conservative again in 2028, now that she's raised all these millions and gotten all this attention. All right, that's going to do it for today, and we will see you next time.